What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 3 of the Adjacent Hex podcast. My name is Zach, and joining me again, as with every month, is my buddy Doug. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. How are you doing?
Pretty well. Just got off a long day of work.
Yeah, me too. These summer days are kind of, they drag. It's hot up there in the office.
Oh, it is. I mean, I'm lucky. I work in a classroom with air conditioning, and of course, go to the store.
We've got air conditioner, but we're on the side of the building where it's either we have our air on, or we don't get any breeze at all. So we can't turn it off because our only window is got the AC unit in it. So we got to crank the AC all day or sweat.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. It's not too bad. I survive.
Yeah. You know, do what you got to do. Pay the bills.
It beats better than helping friends move in 90-degree heat.
Oh, that was the worst.
Just so everybody knows, we helped some of our friends move. Zach and I did on Sunday, and I'm still sore and all cut up.
So. Yeah. Joff and I just finished installing the washer-dryer yesterday, so.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yep, congratulations, Megan and Joff, on your new place.
Yeah.
So what have you been playing?
Oh, I've been playing everything. I'm going to even have to cut it short. I've been playing so much, but right after we did our last episode on expansions, I picked up, actually, Jessie, my wife, got for me as a gift the Battlelore Second Edition expansions.
Ooh, I'm not too familiar with that.
Yeah, it's the Command and Colors system, like Memoir 44 type thing, Battlecry, the Richard Borg system, Fantasy, and I was loving the base game, but, you know, the more the merrier. And absolutely love it. I love the way they introduce new tiles, new missions, new characters, and it's got interesting dynamic where you've got spell cards, lore cards they're called, that are specific to your side, whether you're blue or red. I don't know. They actually have names, but I'm lame.
Well, I mean, sometimes isn't that like when you pick up a game and you play it a few times, you start to forget the little details.
Yeah,
I think they kind of just fall by the wayside, which is fine. Doesn't
I'm creating my own
experience.
My blue knights or my red demon monster things, but with all the new units, they come with new cards, and instead of mixing and matching, you pick one or the other of these decks of 20 cards with the option to swap out 5 cards. So you've pretty much got pre-made decks, but you can still toy with it a little bit to really make it the deck that you want and bring in the units you want. And there's giant bugs and scary monsters and all sorts of ranged units and new knights and new soldiers. It was fantastic.
Oh, that sounds cool.
I cannot recommend that game enough. It is really right up my alley.
I'll have to come over and try it out at some point.
Yeah. I've played, I think the day I got it, Tom and I played for like 6 or 7 hours straight, just scenario after scenario, and I was ready to go again, but we had to eat some food.
Well, I mean, that's important too, right?
Yeah, I, you know, and I don't eat around my board games.
No.
That's my thing. So, definitely recommend Battlelore. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah.
Love the expansion. And this also, I had to lose the Fantasy Flight insert.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about that last episode.
In order to get all this stuff in there. What else did I play? I played Welcome to the Dungeon.
Oh, I love that game.
Yeah, quick little, it's kind of all the rage right now. Quick little 15-minute game. Picked it up for like $10. Really enjoying it. I think Love Letter is still my favorite of the 10-minute pocket games. But Welcome to the Dungeon is, it's a nice change of pace. It's a totally different way of thinking about things. It's a mechanic I hadn't really played with before in a game. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that game was a ton of fun. And it was a surprising amount of variety in it. I mean, when we were going through the different decks of tiles, I guess.
Mm-hmm, the heroes.
The heroes are distinctly different, and you actually feel like you're playing that particular character.
Or everybody is.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of just like a press your luck a little bit. It's fun. I don't know if everybody knows the mechanic, but there's one hero in the middle of the board, and everybody is building the dungeon. You draw a card on your turn, and you can either decide to put it in the dungeon, so you know a monster you're going to have to fight, or the hero is going to have to fight. Or you can put it off to the side and take one of the hero's pieces of equipment away. And so the last person to pass in the round has to go through the dungeon. And it takes 2 successful times to win, 2 times to lose, and you're out. Or you can also win by being the last player standing. I mean, it plays in 15 minutes. You teach it in a minute and a half. It's great.
Yeah, and we'll definitely go on into a little bit more detail on that in an upcoming episode, because I think there's quite a lot of those small games that often fall by the wayside in just board game discussions.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of the times reviews and stuff, they want to go big box. I mean, yeah. You do see reviews for the small games.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just so much going on in a small box, and it's just amazing what people can pack into them these days.
Oh, yeah. You have Welcome to the Dungeon on a shelf next to something big and glorious, like a Descent box or, you know, Dead of Winter. It's like, which one's going to get the focus if you've only got X amount of time to review?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so, the other thing I played was a surprise. It's got Roll and Move. It's got Player Elimination. It's got Paper Money.
Let me guess. Monopoly.
No, sir. This game was actually a lot of fun. It's the game you played. It was Spy Alley.
Oh, right. Okay, of course. I love that one.
Yeah. It just has all these mechanics that I weren't sure how they were going to work. And, you know, Roll and Move and all these things, you just can scare some hobby gamers away, but the games are so quick, the player elimination didn't bother me. There are move cards which allow you to compensate for strictly roll and move. Paper money, you just have to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it's just a necessary evil.
Yeah, but I had a lot of fun. I received that as a gift, and really glad I did, because I've played it a bunch since I got it.
Yeah, it seemed like one that was really easy to just bust out and be like, okay, you know all these mechanics. Anybody who has played any, like, Candyland or Chutes and Ladders or Monopoly or whatever is going to be able to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it also appeals to, like, a Firefly crowd where there's some actual depth of strategy to it with the paper money.
Always there.
Yeah.
Firefly does have paper money.
Firefly does have paper money.
Oh, yeah.
Very pretty paper money, but still paper money one way or the other.
I think I got the oversized paper money from Loot Crate.
Oh, cool.
I think that's actually in my game. I don't know if it goes with the game, but I just tossed it in my game box because I thought, what else am I going to do with it?
Yeah, I feel like that's...
Seems legit.
Yeah.
So how about you? You playing anything new lately? Or
I have, and I think it's more of a topic for another episode because it is... I played Adventure Time Card Wars, and I'm not even an Adventure Time fan, but it was presented to me as the strategy is similar to Magic, which I have been playing since around 1997. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. Not really a huge fan of Adventure Time, but the strategy was really there.
What kind of game is it? I'm not actually that familiar with it.
It's a deck-on-deck combat.
Okay, so like Magic.
Yeah, it's very similar to Magic. And it's the kind of game that I want to go a little bit more in-depth on, play a little bit more before I'm quite ready to talk about it, but I really did enjoy the first playthrough.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And what's interesting to me right now is there's a comic book coming out that has promo cards, and so, of course, our friend Eric, in his infinite quest to Eric things, is looking for those promos quite desperately, to the point where he actually had us order 2 more copies of the comic book that he'll never even open.
You know, I wonder if I have them, because I got the... Were they in the Loot Crate Bravest Warriors comic?
I don't think so.
Okay, because I have that comic, and I just kept it bagged and put it on a shelf. I haven't looked at it yet.
Well, we'll have Eric take a look at it.
Yeah, I don't really know too much about Bravest Warriors. I am a fan of... No, I liked Bravest Warriors. Never mind.
Yeah.
It's Adventure Time that I'm not really familiar with. I do like Bravest Warriors. I love Catbug.
So. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't? But what I'm really looking forward to coming up very, very soon, in fact, next week at time of recordings, it'll have passed by the time this goes live, but Gen Con is coming up next week.
Mm-hmm.
And any hobby gamer will tell you that's when a lot of big announcements happen. Yeah. And a lot of big games start coming out.
That's the biggest in the States, right?
It is the biggest in the United States, or last I checked. Now, we will be at Boston Comic Con working there, so we will not be at Gen Con this year, but we are looking to be there next year, which is pretty exciting.
Very exciting.
And, of course, we will be sort of knee-deep in comic books next weekend, but I will definitely have an iPad on me prepared to demonstrate a couple of digital games that we've been working with companies on. So if you find an Aquabat with a Sentinels of the Multiverse lanyard, that will be where you can try out a couple of new digital games, including Sentinels of the Multiverse, the digital game.
There you go.
So if you're at Boston Comic Con, come find us. Not that it matters, because this will be up after that anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Just realizing that.
Yeah, so to all the people who hear this after Comic Con, ha ha, we had a great time without you there.
Gotcha!
Sigh.
But I did recently, I was watching some just back clips from the late night show, whatever late night show Jimmy Fallon's doing these days. Is he doing the Tonight Show?
I'm not up that late.
Yeah, me know. Either. And that's, I just watch it on the YouTubes. Yeah, it is the Tonight Show. He's doing the Tonight Show. They bounce around so much I can never keep track. But he started a new segment recently called Do Not Game. Did you see that?
I saw it when you posted it on Facebook.
Okay. Basically, he goes through and he looks at fan suggestions for games that just should never, ever have happened. And I think his first one was like Vanilla Ice's Beatbox or something like that. And this clip was absolutely hysterical. And now, I'm a Jimmy Fallon fan to begin with, but I thought that this little expose on bad board games is really quite clever. And it got me thinking, there's a lot of really unfortunate games out there. Vanilla Ice, Electronic Rap being one of them. But, you know, even some of the ones that we've played have just been, for lack of a better word, disappointing.
Are you familiar with Flip the Table?
I have heard of it, but I don't think I've ever paid attention to it.
Oh, I think they're part of the Dice Tower Network. I'm not sure, but they were around before they were members of the Dice Tower Network.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I bring them up is their whole show is they go find these terrible, like Mall Madness and Waterworld the Game, stuff like that. And they play these terrible games and talk about them. That's their whole podcast. That's their show. And I love it. It's one of my favorite podcasts, one of the few I listen to on a regular basis. And they actually played the Vanilla Ice game. So if you want to go back on Table Flips, you can Google it.
Yeah,
but they have played that, and it was just as bad as on Jimmy Fallon's show.
Part of me, just out of morbid curiosity, wants to get my hands on that game. I'll have to check at the local thrift shops.
That's where you do it. Yeah, be careful, don't start requesting really crappy games.
I know someone will send it to us. Please, for the love of Pete, do not send us that game.
Well, maybe that one,
maybe that one, but you know, some of the Titanic or Ring Around the Nosy. They all seemed really bad. But I think really it's not so much the games that you know are going to be bad that disappoint you. It's the games that you're excited about, legitimately.
Yeah, I could see that. I would go into Vanilla Ice expecting a laugh, expecting not to get a good game, but I'd have a good time the one time I played it. But there are other games they're hyped up or whatever. And you play them and they're just, they don't live up to that hype.
And one such game for me is a board game that recently came out from Aviary Games called Alchemy. That's Alchemy with an exclamation point.
Yeah, I've seen it. I haven't got to play it. I know you played it. I know Jesse played it. I know Eric owns it.
I actually own it as well.
Oh.
And it's, yeah, but because Eric gave it to me as a gift.
Oh.
The premise is you are a chemist and you are sort of combining potions and building potions and trying to score more points than your opponent. And in theory, I like the concept, I really, really like. And I was like, okay, you know, there's a little, there's some press your luck elements because sometimes you have to drink a potion to power yourself up a little bit, or you play a card, you know, maybe a little take that action against some of your opponents, make them discard some potion ingredient or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the concept, but the gameplay is very slow and kind of non-interactive despite the prevalence of the take that element.
Like you're playing your own game?
You're very much playing your own game.
Even with the take that element, huh?
Yeah, it becomes like the take that element is, it almost seems as an afterthought.
Could have been.
It may have been.
I don't know. I've never played the game. I wasn't in the room when they were designing it or playtesting it, but maybe somebody said needs more player interaction and they tried to toss in sort of shoehorn a mechanic in there that doesn't really fit the game.
I agree. But I also have to say, the rulebook displays several different ways to play the game, ranging from the very, very simple, which is just collect your ingredients, drink your potions when you need to, try and score more points by the end of the game, all the way up to you have a specific scientist who gives you a specific bonus, and there's all kinds of added layers of complexity. So this game came to me very highly recommended from a couple of friends of ours who are friends of the developer, and I played it through once with Eric and my girlfriend Caitlin, and it was enjoyable, but it felt like there was something missing. And then we played it again a couple of days later, and I'll be honest, I was bored to tears by it.
Oh, really?
My focus was elsewhere. I just felt like I was going through the motions.
Now, what level were you playing on? Were you playing on, like, the easiest level, or, like...
We were playing on the lowest level of complexity that we could find within the base box.
Do you think if you played with a harder complexity level, you might be more engaged?
I thought that at first, but a friend of ours who did play it on a higher complexity felt that it was just, at that complexity level, it was underdeveloped.
Oh, really?
And the game just, there was something lacking about it. Some of the characters were a little bit overpowered. Some of the abilities just didn't make sense in the context of what everybody else was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a little bit frustrating.
That's unfortunate to hear.
Yeah, and I really do want it to be good. So, and he's recently released a rules update for it. So I'm hoping that fixes some of the problems that it has. Because truly, I do want to like this game. It does.
So you feel like it's like 90% of a game?
I would not even say 90%. I would say at this point, 75% of a game.
Okay. All right. But at its current stage, original rules, not rule set,
it's just disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Because so many people like it. Like, and I just don't understand.
I actually had a game experience just over the weekend. I got to play, this is sort of stemming from, you hear great things and it's really popular, but I got to play Lords of Waterdeep.
Oh, I've heard really good things about that game.
Yeah, and so had I. And then I played it, and I'll put it this, we played three games back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has something to do with it. But the first game, I was enjoying myself. It's a little simple Euro game, worker placement.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be like wizards and rogues and knights and stuff, but it was like purple cube, black cube, white cube, orange cube.
So the theme just didn't seem to fit there.
It was kind of there. I liked the little flavor text on the cards, but I was still enjoying the mechanics and the gameplay,
mm-hmm.
despite the theme. And the first game, there were three of us playing, and I think at the end of the game, all three of us were within 10 points of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So really close game. Then we played a second game, and it was... The very first turn of the game, one of the quests came out, and one of the rewards was this lieutenant, which is essentially an extra worker, somebody you can use every round to collect resources and do things.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out first, and the first player grabbed that quest, because you can grab whatever quest you want,
yeah,
and finished that quest, and then had that one-man advantage by like round two or three. So in the second game, two of us were within 10 points of each other, and the winner was like 50 points ahead.
Oh, that sounds completely busted.
Yeah, I don't know, like, it was a new game for everybody. Maybe there's a rule or something we missed. Maybe there's a strategy to block that. But I was just like, if that comes out right away, somebody can grab that and they just crushed us. And I mean, that could be the learning curve, but I don't want to lose by 50 points in my second game when I was just within three of the winner in the first.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like...
You know what I mean? And then the third time we played, I don't know if it was just fatigue or whatever, but I was getting frustrated and I was bored. It seemed like it would take forever to come to my turn, and then I would just put a meeple down, grab a cube, and wait another 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt like I could do anything I want. And not in, like, CO2 or Village, I may not be able to do what I want, but I always felt like I could do something.
Right.
You know what I mean? And here, I was just like, somebody's on that spot. I guess I'll take this cube that's going to do me nothing. And I don't know. And it just, I was getting bored and frustrated, and my turns were taking forever to get to me. And here's the crazy thing. The end of the game, I was within like 12 points of the winner. I finished second.
Mm-hmm.
And I had like 180 some points.
Huh.
180 points in an 8-round game is like 22.5 points a round.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I'm like cranking out points, but I, instead of feeling like I was accomplishing thing, I just felt frustrated and bored the whole time. And like I said, I don't know if it was just fatigue or what, but I mean, I grab my cell phone, which is something I never do when I
right.
Play
yeah.
Games.
You're usually hyper focused on games. You
yeah.
never get on your phone.
And it's not the time. Like I said, we played Battlelore for 6-7 hours straight. we'll sit through Game of Thrones or whatever. You know, I've played 5-hour games of that without batting an eyelash. Fortress America is a game that's dragged on for us, and I love every minute of it, but this just did not hold me.
Yeah, and I think games can do that for different reasons, too. One of the games that I saw when Will Wheaton first started Tabletop was the card game Gloom. And
oh, yeah.
I also knew that our friend Emily really, really loves that game. And I understand, and I understood when I bought it, that it appeals to a very specific crowd.
And Gloom is a storyteller.
It is a storytelling game where you basically, you have a family, and your hand of cards is designed to make your characters suffer and make your opponent's characters happy. And the winner is the family who is ostensibly dead at the end of the game.
Or has suffered the most.
Which, in concept, that makes me laugh beyond most other game concepts.
Yeah, it's done in a humorous way. It's not, I mean, it's morbid, but it's not like gross morbid. It's comically.
Yeah, and it makes you feel like a scumbag sometimes. But like, you have to be with the right group of people.
Mm-hmm.
People who are willing to make up a story to go with it and not just sort of hyper competitive, what are sometimes referred to as spike style gamers who are just they're just trying to win. In Gloom, I feel like the objective is not to kill the family the fastest. It's to really tell a story with,
flesh out
okay,
that story.
This guy, you know, gets hit by a car because he was crossing the road to go to the circus where he grew up. And you have to, like, look through the cards a lot and figure out what's happened to each character. And it was a bummer because most people can't put themselves in that mentality. That state where my job is not to win here, it's to tell the best story.
Yeah, I think, I agree. I think you do need the right crowd. I only got to play Gloom once. I didn't really enjoy it. I think I could really get into storytelling games if, like you said, we had the right crowd. Because I don't mind, like, that aspect. That doesn't.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. You have a little card that does something and you can create a little story on the spot. But the guy who owned the game and taught me the game really was in it to win. That sort of spike mentality. And the game was over before I knew what happened, you know, and he knew these like special cards were in the deck,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't play for the storytelling aspect. He played it to win, and it just kind of, like you said, that destroys a game like that.
Oh, it really does. And I mean, you and I, like, we're both pretty adept at storytelling. I mean, I've written comedy sketches, so have you, and we get into the story a lot more than, for example, the twins who help us out on anotherletdown.com, who would be they're just sort of focused on the joke and getting in and out and done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you and I go a little bit deeper on the
we
characters.
We like to embellish.
And yeah, and spend a little bit more time with things. So while our experiences with Gloom were not positive in either of our cases, I think if we had the right crowd to play it with, it could be a really fun, almost party game.
And you know what? That's a great point, is that I would definitely, as much as I really didn't like my experience with Gloom, I'd play it again in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
With the
Absolutely.
Right people. With
Absolutely.
The right people. Yeah. But, and I mean, that goes even Lords of Waterdeep, which, you know, I went from liking to thinking, oh, in right circumstances could be kind of broken, to just being like, oh my gosh, no.
Mm.
I would still probably recommend that to a lot of people, especially if you wanted like an hour long, very light Euro style game.
Right. And I mean, that's a thing. Like, sometimes a game that you absolutely love just disappoints you for a reason that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas other games contain a design feature that inherently lets you down.
Mm-hmm.
When you told me that Spy Alley uses paper money as a mechanic, I was like, there were red flags and alarms going off in my head. Like, how are you going to convince me to play this game? It ended up being very good, but another game that I adore, Galactic Strike Force, is just so hard to win that it prevents people from even sitting down at the table.
Really?
Which is, it's a huge bummer because the game is awesome. It's a sort of alien invasion theme where you take on, you know, some ships and pilots of a race in an outer space environment.
Mm-hmm.
And your
That's
job
a co-op
is to,
game,
it is
right?
a co-op. It's a co-op against a deck of Big Bad. And the Big Bad sort of moves around the system and tries to blow things up and beat you. And the game itself, once you figure it out, is very, very easy. Mechanically, anyway.
Okay.
The issue is the villain gets stronger at a rate that makes the game drag on, and you struggle, you the player characters struggle to keep up, and it becomes very, very difficult to win the game. Now, that's not something that I mind at all. One of my all-time favorites, Forbidden Desert, which I believe we've talked about before, is very difficult to win, especially on the upper levels. But people will sit down and play that for, you know, without even batting an eyelid.
How long does Galactic Strike Force take?
It can take a while.
Okay, do you think that has something to do with it? Like, Forbidden Desert, win or lose, the game is over 45 minutes.
And Galactic Strike Force takes a lot longer. And it is difficult to teach. I think an experienced team could probably A, succeed and win a game, and B, you know, play in an hour, hour and a half.
Have you beaten it?
I have once.
Okay. How many times have you?
I've played it, I think, 6 times now.
Okay.
And so that's not a particularly good record. Yeah, I think I won at PAX this last year.
Okay. You have some pros on your team?
I did. So, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah, that really helps.
Yeah.
Well, it really can. I mean, if you know certain things, even in Gloom, somebody knows the cards that could potentially come up.
Right.
You could start to do certain builds and stuff. So, I don't know if PAX was your first game or your last game.
It was my latest.
Okay. Experience can help.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's pretty good for this month. And it's worth noting that if it weren't for the games that disappoint us somehow, it would be really, really difficult to tell what a good game is. So, on some level, we do have to say we do appreciate all these games that are maybe underdeveloped or subpar or disappointing somehow.
Well, even if I can add to that real quick, I know you were going to close, but that does remind me, just because we were disappointed doesn't mean it's not a good game, doesn't mean it's not for you. And sometimes that disappointment can come out of all of the great hype.
Absolutely. That's a very, very good point.
So, I mean, that happened with me with Sheriff... I'm ruining your whole outro.
No, that's
we're gonna have to roll with it. That happened with me with Sheriff of Nottingham. I'd never played it, but it was coming back in print, and everybody talked about how much they loved it, how great it was, how excited they were. And then I got to play it, and I thought it was good. I wouldn't buy it. I would play it again, but I'd rather play something else. But a lot of people love that game, and just because we're saying it's disappointing doesn't make it bad.
Right. Actually, you know, to touch on an earlier point, when Alchemy was first presented to me, someone told me, oh, it plays a lot like Splendor, which is a game that you and I both really like.
Mm-hmm. When we play it right.
Yeah, of course, we have.
We flip-flop. We go back and forth between the actual rules and some made-up garbage.
But my thought process there is, well, why wouldn't I just play Splendor? You know, like if there's a game that I really, really like that someone says, oh, this game is very similar to it. You'll love it.
Cult of the New.
Yeah. I'm just like,
always got to try the new game.
Yeah, I suppose. But, you know, don't get me wrong. I will always give a new game the benefit of the doubt. I will always play a new game, whether someone says it's, you know, just like something else or not. But I've still always got that voice in the back of my head, like, well, why am I not just playing X?
If you're having a bad time. I mean, if you come across a game that, like, this is totally going to replace X.
Yeah, well,
that's why you play, right?
Right. And that, of course, raises red flags for a complete other battery of reasons, but, that, you know, it is what it is. You know, I've got plenty of games. One of the first games I ever played, one of the first Euro games I ever played was Twilight Imperium. And
oh, yeah, we're going to set up a Twilight Imperium day.
Yeah.
I've actually recruited my buddy Sean McNamara, who writes for the Cardboard Republic. So you should check them out. Loves that game. It's his favorite game. And I've never got to play with him. And now you want to play it. He wants to play it. I want to play it.
And I own it.
And you own it. We're ready to do this.
Yeah, sounds really good. All right. I think that's probably pretty good for this month.
I'll try not to ruin this outro.
For now, if you want to check out older episodes of the podcast and maybe some of our other work, head yourself on over to anotherletdown.com. God, that sounded dorky. Huge thanks to our editor, Jody Wagner. Jody, we really couldn't do this without you. You are a fantastic human being, and we really appreciate all your work.
Thank you, Jody.
If you have some feedback for us, you can reach us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at DENONCZD, and Doug's is at ITSOKTOLAFF. If you have something a bit longer to say to us, feel free to send us an email. We are adjacenthex@anotherletdown.com. From all of us here at Adjacent Hex, happy gaming, and we will talk to you next month.
I love ruining outros.